Well, Java's forests are just a part of the planet that's in peril. According to the UN report, Global Environment Outlook 4, the world is hurtling headlong to disaster. Achim Steiner is executive director of the panel that produced the study.
The sobering and not surprising findings are that on virtually all major variables of development, we still have to conclude that the signs are pointing downwards. We have not turned the corner on major issues such as energy, climate change, loss of biodiversity, decline in fisheries, deforestation.
The UN panel even warns that mass extinction is possible. Of course, there have been bleak warnings about the fate of the Earth before. Among the most famous of pessimistic predictions were from biologist Paul Ehrlich. In 1968, Ehrlich wrote The Population Bomb, a landmark book in which he predicted that as a result of an exploding population, by 1985, quote, the battle to feed all of humanity will be over, and that in the 1970s and 80s, hundreds of millions of people will starve to death in spite of any crash programs embarked upon now. Paul Ehrlich is Bing Professor of Population Studies at Stanford University now, and we called him up to see if he's changed his perspective. Hi, Professor Ehrlich.
Nice to be here.
You know, this UN report is pretty pessimistic, and you've got a history of being something of a professional pessimist. Is it time for me to start walking down the street with a sign saying the end is near?
I think it's time for people to take very seriously the things that we're doing to our life support systems. In other words, it's not just me that's pessimistic. In 1993, 58 academies of science said, that is basically all the academies of science in the world said, if we don't change our ways, we're doomed. And 1,500 of the world's leading scientists got out a statement called World Scientists Warning to Humanity, said exactly the same thing. Wasn't covered in the press at all. In other words, the scientific community has been trying to warn society about the various things that we're facing, and it just hasn't penetrated the media or certainly governments.
But back in 1968, when you wrote The Population Bomb, you wrote that the battle to feed all of humanity is over. That was, what, 40 years ago?
40 years ago, and perfectly correct. We still have about a billion people who don't get enough food to function properly. In 1968, in the same book, I warned about the possibilities of global warming, and that's something the scientific community has known about since about 1898. In other words, none of this stuff is new. It's just a massive report happened to come out of the UN saying all the trends are in the wrong direction, and they're perfectly correct, but it's something, again, that the scientific community has been saying as loud as it could for a long time.
So we are facing an existential crisis.
We're facing a crisis in which the way many of us are able to live will not be possible for the vast majority of people sometime in the relatively near future, hopefully after I'm dead, but maybe not.
Well, according to the UN report, by 2050, there'll be about 9.7 billion people on the planet. Is that in excess of the carrying capacity of the planet?
Certainly in anything like today's lifestyles. You know, if you try and move to a battery, what one of my colleagues calls a battery chicken type of world, in which everybody has the absolute minimum required to keep them alive, it might be possible.
Did you say battery chicken?
Battery chickens are these situations where you raise billions of chickens in one building where every chicken has, a full square foot and just is in there and gets fed and grows. That's the battery chicken world where everybody is living the absolute minimum standard of living so you can maximize the number of people. If we want, for example, the United States to go on for thousands and thousands of years, the way to do it isn't to see how many people we can cram in the next 20. You got to remember we're at about 6.6 billion now, talking about adding about 2.5 billion more. First of all, 2.5 billion is 500 million people more than were on the planet when I was born in 1932. So we're adding more than existed when I was born. Second, the next 2.5 billion are going to be a lot more expensive to take care of environmentally than the previous 2.5 billion, because, of course, people are smart. They farm the best land first. You can't get oil by sticking a pointed stick in the ground in Pennsylvania anymore. You got to drill down a couple of miles, and water has to be transported long distances. And I think anybody who reads the newspapers and can count can see that we're in deep trouble just from the numbers of people versus the resources that are available. Ask them in Atlanta. where they're running out of water. Ask them in Southern California, where climate change is helping huge fires to devastate areas. I was just in Brazil, and the Pantanal swamp area was burning, and the Cerrado, the savanna areas south of the Amazon, were burning in record droughts. So, you know, you just have to look around and see what's happening.
Well, Professor, I can't resist the wordplay temptation. That is, you know, you say battery chicken. Some people say Chicken Little.
Yeah, well, they say Chicken Little, but again, I warned 40 years ago about climate change. What are we having going on now? I warned 40 years ago about emergent diseases. What do we have now? I warned 40 years ago that if we didn't do something about the population situation, people would still be hungry. We've got many, many millions of people hungry. So Chicken Little says the sky is falling. Just remember, maybe Chicken Little is right.
According to the UN report, each person on the planet needs about 22 hectares. But I'm thinking, you know, there's Hong Kong, there's New York, you know.
Yeah, that's right. The thing you got to remember is the people in New York don't live on New York. They import stuff from acres all over the rest of the world. In other words, it's a common fact, actually been named by the scientific community, the Netherlands fallacy, the idea that the whole planet can be as crowded as the Netherlands. And, of course, it's not people versus area. It's people versus the resources that support them. And those resources include things called sinks, like the capacity of the atmosphere to absorb carbon dioxide. That's a very important resource for the planet. It's one we're overusing at the moment.
Are we as a species capable of comprehending and dealing with problems of this magnitude?
Sure we are. We're perfectly capable of it. We're the dominant animal on the planet. We're in many ways brilliant, but we haven't gotten the political and ethical will together to do the things we ought to be doing. And the educational system is deteriorating. The media don't generally cover this stuff. I mean, if you look at the top stories in the media, how often do they deal with the fact that we're within decades of losing our civilization? It's almost never mentioned. There are some things now. It's coming out. But, for instance, you would think, watching the media today, that the only big threat is climate change. But, of course, many people feel, for instance, that the number of toxic substances we're adding to the environment are an even bigger threat. In many villages in the Arctic and subarctic, there are only half as many male babies being born as female babies, and it's likely a sign of the hormone-mimicking chemicals that we manufacture, release into the environment, and that are carried by the climate system to the poles. The threat of emerging diseases, the first one, of course, has been AIDS, the first really big one in recent decades, but the more people we have, the greater the threat, particularly the ones that are malnourished, of new plagues taking over, a new flu, and so on. So that's considered a huge threat. And the loss of biodiversity, the other organisms that are the working parts of our life support systems, is also a huge threat. I mean, even economists are looking at issues like, are we consuming too much now? In other words, the scholarly community is enormously concerned, and the general public, and particularly our so-called leadership, is utterly ignorant. So it's not a great situation.
So it has not reached the tipping point?
We don't know. But what other choice do we have but to try and change so that if we haven't reached the tipping point, we don't reach it? Because the tipping point is going to be miserable, and an awful lot of people will die, and lifestyles will change very, very dramatically. And we don't want to do that. So, you know, I can't be incredibly optimistic about what we're going to do, but you can say that societies can change very rapidly when the time is ripe. Look, for instance, how rapidly the Soviet Union disappeared when none of us expected it to. When I was a kid, lynchings were common in the south of the United States. They aren't anymore. In other words, things can change very rapidly. We don't fully understand why, but when the time is ripe, they change. And I think that your chore and mine is to try and ripen the time.
Well, Professor, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to me, too. Thank you very much.
Stanford Professor Paul Ehrlich's new book, which he co-authored with his wife, Anne Ehrlich, is called The Dominant Animal, Human Evolution and the Environment. Coming up, boldly going where Hollywood has gone before. Stay tuned to Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment, and from Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.